A magazine. A podcast. A shameless plug? What? Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt. And welcome to the latest episode of The Shameless Plug, the show in which I sit down every month, roughly halfway through the on-sale cycle of the latest issue of Empire Magazine. And I chat about that month's issue with the editor-in-chief of Empire Magazine. It's Nick Desamlian!
Hey.
Oh,
what a build up.
I know.
You've gone full Bard. And I love it. You've gone full Travis Scott.
I'm Bard from many establishments across the country, as it happens.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's made building this wooden horse, wheeling it in here and hiding inside it for the last 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Almost worthwhile.
Yeah. We're no longer allowed in the studio. So Nick had a capital idea that he would build a wooden horse and leave it outside Boward Towers. And they've brought it in. They've accepted it as an offering from us, a peace offering from Empire to the gods. And now we're inside and we've managed to get into a studio. Fire the wooden horse. Had to kill a whole bunch of people on the way here.
Yeah, and there's Bower security guards randomly stabbing spears every 10 minutes into it.
But that's
we've dodged
fine.
Them. We've dodged them.
Well, they're gone now, and they knew the risks.
James died.
James Dyer died.
That's okay.
Yeah, yeah, that's fine. Yeah, yeah. He was expendable. But we're very, very excited. And why are we banging on about wooden horses and
it's hard to say.
And all sorts of stuff, Nick? Is because your odyssey at last is over.
Yeah.
Your odyssey to cover Chris Nolan's The Odyssey, which is this month's cover story. Second time this movie has appeared on the cover of Empire Magazine in the last few months. And this one, of course, Nick, is very, very timely because we're recording this shameless plug the day before the movie opens.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to get a rush of people who will see the movie this weekend. And then they'll go, I want to know how Chris Nolan pulled that off. Where can I find this information?
Yeah.
And the information is all here, isn't it, Nick? Inside the pages.
Or if you want to read about me titting about on set.
Okay.
Always breaking the IMAX cameras. You can find that too. But yeah, this is very rare, actually, that we go this late with a film. We have done it lots of times in Empire history, but we haven't done it for a while. But
sometimes, as with Aliens, 40 years after.
Sometimes 40 years after.
It's like, but, shit, we forgot to cover Aliens.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's taken 3,000 years for us to put the Odyssey on the cover, so we thought we'd make up to Homer by putting it on twice. But yeah, it has been an odyssey. It's been amazing putting this stuff together. You know, we the last cover we did was our 2026 preview, and that was the first images and interviews from the Odyssey anywhere. So that was very exciting, stroke extremely nerve-wracking, because it was so top secret. I was on set a couple of times last summer, and I've been hanging on to that. So that first cover story was just based on interviews with Christopher Nolan and Matt Damon. I got to go to Syncope and talk to Christopher Nolan out there. And then I had a great Zoom with Matt Damon where his dog was causing quite a ruckus. It's a very adorable
dog.
His dog
Argus.
Called Charlie.
Oh, Charlie.
Not Argus. That's the character. That's Odysseus's dog. But his dog is called Charlie, as is Christopher Nolan's. So the Odyssey had the working title Charlie's Tale.
A cosmic coincidence.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's wild.
That's in the piece. But we didn't put any of the set stuff in. We were hanging on to that. But yeah, I did get to go on set twice. I went to LA. I went to, even though it's a Universal film, they were filming it at Sony on, I can't remember the number of the stage now, but it's like one of the biggest sound stages. It's where Nolan shot The Batcave for, I think, Dark Knight Rises. And they had the Ithaca Palace set there. And it was the end of the movie. It was like, I didn't know what I was. I went to LA and I went on set and I had no idea what I was going to see. They gave me no clue. They just said it's going to be something pretty cool. So I turned up and it was the end of the movie.
The bit where all the people's names go up on screen.
Yeah, not that bit.
That bit. They shoot that practically, don't they?
that was not what I was. Yeah, it was just a man on a computer typing names in.
Yeah,
but
no,
it was amazing. It was like everyone was there. Matt Damon, Tom Holland, Anne Hathaway, Robert Pattinson, John Leguizamo, who I didn't recognize because
he's in heavy
you see the film,
makeup.
You'll see he's really aged up and one of his eyes is all milky. And he walked past and Emma Thomas was like, that's John Leguizamo. And I'm like, you know, the least observant journalist in the world, clearly. And it was great. It was amazing. And I saw stuff happening there. This often happens on sets, right? Where you go on and they're filming something that is a massive spoiler. And I didn't put it in the piece. And I shouldn't probably say it now, right? Because people...
No, don't say it now. Don't say it now.
And it feels weird talking about spoilers, but I saw
for a
death, let's say.
For many thousands
of years. Death scene that is quite pivotal in this. But
yeah.
But it was awesome. Christopher Nolan was operating the lightning. It takes place during a storm, this scene, and he was pressing a button and the lightning was coming on, and it was very cool to see.
And they say directors have God complexes.
He went full Zeus. But it was fantastic. And if you've seen the movie, there are two levels to this palace, and you could literally just go up the stairs and it would just walk around it like it's a real palace. And they had the weapons storeroom, which comes in, it plays an important part mm-hmm. in the film. And you just go, and they had all the weapons. I got to hold a sword. It was a rubber sword.
Oh, okay.
Got to wield it.
Yeah.
But it was a really cool day. And then a month after that, I went to Inverness. I took EasyJet. which Odysseus should have done. And yes. I flew up to Inverness.
Although he wouldn't have paid the charges.
He wouldn't have been able to afford a drink because they charge you for the can. But and then got in a car and went about 45 minutes into this very, what's the word? Like
dense?
Remote.
Remote. Yeah. Okay.
Remote forest where you're just going through this forest and you're not seeing anybody. And then we eventually got to the very north coast, which is, you'll see it in the film, the Lystragonian sequence where the beach comes right up to the woods. And I got to see amazing stuff, I got to say.
I think you could say what that is, right? Because that's like halfway through the film.
Yeah, and they've been leading on it in the marketing, but it's essentially Odysseus and his men pitch up on this spooky island and go into the woods and basically end up getting enormously twatted by these, by these giants. Now, they're not giants, because I asked Christopher Nolan about this.
They might be giants.
Yeah. I got to do quite a few interviews with Christopher Nolan for this, but shortly before we went to press, I had my final interview with him and got to go through, and I was like, can I check some things with you? And I said, are the Lystragonians giants? He said, they're giant, but they're not giants.
Okay, please explain. With Timothy Dalton?
I'm not sure I can.
Did you press him on this? Like Woodward and Bernstein?
Warriors. No, that was just how he has it in his mind. So
they're giant, but they're not giants.
They're large size, but they're also not cannibals. In the original Odyssey, Homer's take, they are cannibals, but in this, they're not. Or at least you don't see them eating anyone.
I mean, there's probably not time, but yeah, it's a great sequence.
There is some people being eaten elsewhere in the film.
Yes, there is.
That was why they made that tweak. But yeah, it was fascinating. Okay. But they were doing wire work. People were getting slammed into trees. There was a giant device called the turntable where there were like concentric rings going in different directions and people were sword fighting on top of it. There was an amazing optical illusion, which was very cool to finally see in the film, where it looks like they're trees in the distance, but they're actually sort of sticks nearer to the camera. I'm really bad at explaining this stuff. It was amazing. And they were filming all of this stuff with like seven cameras in this forest at the same time. So there was, and Nolan was kind of hopping from one setup to another. It was a great day. It was one of the coolest days I've had on a set.
How many times did you talk to Chris Nolan for this piece?
I talked to him. So I had that hour sit down in Syncope for the first cover story. And then for this one, I went back to LA and talked to him while he was in the sound mix. I got to sit in with him while it was basically one shot, essentially. It was the shot of the Trojan horse on these giant logs being pulled towards Troy. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate the sound mix now because I see how much went into it. It was like 20 minutes of just intensively looping this scene and Nolan getting the sound of the wood crunching just right, and a lot of time and thought went into every tiny detail in this film. And then I sat with him for another hour, and then we had that half an hour catch up on the phone just before we went to press, which was super helpful because we got to talk about like the R rating that had just been rated R that day. So I got to ask him about that and talk to him about Samantha Morton and Cersei and all that kind of stuff.
It's a bit of a soft R rating, weirdly. And there's quite a bit of violence in the movie, but there's nothing I would say that is, you know, particularly gory or icky or over the top. There are three F-bombs, which almost, I would guess...
I think two of them come from Corey Hawkins.
Yes, they do, which I think probably, as much as anything, contributed to the R rating. It's a very interesting decision.
Yeah, the Cyclops
decision.
Doesn't drop an F-bomb.
No,
he
drops a lot of things.
He drops stuff.
But he doesn't drop an F-bomb. But anyway, listen, you guys, by the time this is going up, you will probably have come out of your first screen of The Odyssey. So we don't want to go into details about the film too much. There will be a spoiler special. Nick and I and a couple of other people are going to be doing an immediate reaction Odyssey spoiler special, part one of two. immediately after this. In fact, shameless plug, I ask you about the time you spent with Chris Nolan, Nick, for a couple of reasons. One, you know, doing what we do, when we do stories like this, in-depth stories, then obviously I have the podcast as well on top of things. Sometimes you'll find yourself in conversation with, most often a director, but sometimes it could be an actor as well, repeatedly, many, many times during the you know, the writing of a feature. And then for me, when I go onto the podcast, I'll do spoiler specials with stuff. And I remember doing Destin Daniel Cretton for Shang-Chi. And I interviewed him a bunch for the magazine and then a bunch for the podcast. And the last time I spoke to him, he was like, "Oh, not you again."
I had that with Jerry Seinfeld for B-Movie. I interviewed Jerry Seinfeld on multiple continents. We talked about bees so many times. And then eventually, like, we were done with the magazine coverage. And James was like, "Right, we want to do a bee quiz online. You have to do it, Nick, because you've done all the B-Movie stuff." And I went into the hotel suite in London and Jerry Seinfeld with questions about bees. And he looked at me and went, "Not you again." And you could tell he meant it.
I think he meant it. I will say Destin Daniel Cretton was kidding. But I also remember Jim Mangold for, I think, might have been The Wolverine or Logan. I interviewed him for like the fifth time. And he went, "God damn it, Hewitt, haven't I told you enough about this movie?" Yeah.
Weirdly, with all that time with Christopher Nolan, I genuinely feel like we've only scraped the surface.
Yes.
Because A, he's so secret and careful, let's say. He says, "I'm not secret, I'm..." What does he say? He has a word that he uses
protective?
About it. Protective or something like that. He has very firm lines in his mind of like what he wants to talk about.
You may have noticed he's one of the few directors who has not done a spoiler special.
Yeah, he doesn't love explaining why he's done things or anything like that, but he is fascinating. And but genuinely, that there is so much in this movie, is so packed with performances and moments, and just on every level, all the craft stuff. And there was one point where we talked for almost 10 minutes about the axe heads. There's a very condensed version of it in the current issue, but he talked about the why he decided to go for six axe head, like six rows of axe heads with them two crossed.
Yeah.
And that was not a decision he came to lightly. And there was a massive thought process behind it. And he changed his mind on it. So I think his AD talked him into doing the way you see it in the film. But he's definitely thinks about everything. So
he keeps his because a couple of times, so I didn't do it. I spoke to him for the podcast for The Odyssey. And I just thought he's not going to want to talk spoilers at this point. And I did bring up a sequence later in the film, and he was very careful about talking about it. Because twice we went in the room with him for the podcast before. I think it was for The Dark Knight Rises and Interstellar, and went, "Okay, can we talk spoilers?" And he went, "I'd rather not." And so we had to kind of pivot. We respect that. Obviously, that is his process. Maybe as time passes, he will feel more free about talking about some of his choices in The Odyssey, because I'm really, really intrigued by some of the changes he makes to the source material, some of the things that he does, like the way he futzes with time is really interesting.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff we'd love to talk to him about. But I was just intrigued by how long you had with him, because on the cover you say 3 days with Christopher Nolan. So were you living inside his house and he just didn't know?
One day that he knows of. No, it was, if you want to crunch the numbers, my friend, 2 days on set and one day in LA, speaking to him and being at the sound mix and all of that stuff. So okay. I'm not even including the day at Syncope.
So it was actually 4 days.
That was for the other issue.
3.5 days, 9.5 weeks.
We should have really, we should have put all of this on the cover as cover lines, just really complicated maths, like Oppenheimer style calculations. But I think 3 days is fair. And I believe we were the only people to be on set of this film, which was very cool. We kind of approached him very early on when this film was announced and kind of pitched what we wanted to do and how excited we were about this film. And it was amazing. Now, as we've kind of finished it all, like it's our own kind of odyssey of covering this film, like I feel kind of amazed that it all worked out, you know, even better than I'd hoped in terms of what we actually got to do. But yeah, to get to go on a Christopher Nolan set is pretty amazing, because he's out there, you know, he gets his movies in under schedule. Like this was meant to be 100 days and I think 91 or 93.
Okay.
So he shaved like a week off the schedule. But he shoots so fast, but doing really complicated stuff, but everyone knows what they're doing. And so I think Tom Holland compared his crew to like Navy SEALs, because they just are so good and so fast, and they're doing things that people haven't done before.
I think you'll find that a lot of people who are involved in things like production and line producing and, you know, just the day-to-day logistics of a movie, I've discovered this over the years, a lot of them come from the military. So they leave military service, where obviously everything is incredibly detailed and synchronized down to the last second. And they go into the film industry, and that is a transferable skill set. I remember speaking to a line producer on No Time to Die when I was on set in Jamaica, of all places. And he was saying, yep, it's absolutely the same skill set and it's the same approach. And you wake up and you go, everything's, you know, and you can marshal this incredible, crew in the same way that you would marshal your troops.
But at the same time, they have all of that. But at the same time, they're adapting and they don't, if it's raining, if the weather is not what they wanted or expected, they don't stop and wait. They just go shoot for it. And so, in Scotland, they had the boats out on the beach, the three big boats that you'll see in the film. And the weather had been horrific, but they had just gone out in the boats. And Emma Thomas described it as sporty weather, but she said people had been throwing up and they just went out anyway. And it really adds to the texture of the film that they're out there in this crazy weather and it's out in the elements. But yeah, they were really happy they had just captured one of my favorite shots in the film. Is you see dolphins like swimming past the boat, and that was just something they captured on the fly. And you can only get that if you go out onto the actual ocean. So they were really happy that they had just got that shot just before I joined them.
Amazing. Just a couple of last things, very, very quickly. Your opening line, Christopher Nolan is flinging thunderbolts. It's true. But that's your repeat that, don't you? That motif throughout the different sections in your feature.
Yeah, I mean, it just felt right. I mean, there's a bit of that in the film itself, I think, with the Travis Scott stuff, certainly, of like the sort of the repetition and the kind of the rhythm of that. So I kind of wanted to lean into that a bit with the writing of it and make it feel like a little bit mythic.
Mm. We don't often talk about this, but how do you approach, because I'll approach a feature and I will try to have the last line in some way marry up to the opening line or reflect the opening line or be an inversion of the opening line. And your last line, spoiler alert, is prepare for thunder. So, you know, is that a deliberate thing? When you write your opening line, do you have your last line in mind? Or do you get to the last paragraph and you go, fuck, I don't have a last line. What can I do? Do I try and link it back to the opening section?
Yeah.
What's your process?
To pull the curtain back, yeah. With this one, it was more like, fuck, what am I going to write? It was one of those where I didn't know what the last line was going to be and I got there. But then it seemed right. To have the circularity of like going back to the beginning. And, you know, you don't want to do that every single time because then it becomes a cliche, and maybe it already is a cliche, but it felt right with this one to come back, loop around thunder and lightning. But yeah, sometimes when I write, I know what the ending is going to be before I've started writing it. And you have the beginning and the end, and then you're sort of trying to get there. But yeah.
How soon do you have your openings? Because I remember you writing a piece on Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Yeah.
And you had your opening, which was about the Edgar Wright cocktail.
Yeah.
Edgar Wright Martini, I think it was.
Yeah.
And you had your opening like weeks, maybe even months before you wrote the piece.
Yeah.
Is that kind of how you work? Do things pop into your head, or are you a fly guy, on the fly guy?
I always think like if there's something that jumps out to you and you keep thinking about, then that's probably the place to start. I don't know if you have the same thing, but certainly I spent that day on set and the one thing I kept thinking about was how cool it was that he was going Zeus and doing the lightning. So I was like, that's such a great detail. It's so perfect. And also it's something only we could put in a piece because you're aware that everyone else is going to be writing pieces on the Odyssey. But if it's something that you have personally seen and no one else has, then it's a great way to open because it's going to feel original. But the Scott Pilgrim one was a bit convoluted, maybe. It was, I can't even remember now where that came from. But yeah, we found out there was
a recipe,
Edgar Wrightini. Yeah. So we decided to structure the whole thing like making a cocktail.
Yeah.
But
I've got, I'm writing an upcoming cover feature. It's not the one that you think. that's later. But I'm writing an upcoming cover feature and I've only done one of the interviews for this, this film, and I have an opening in my head, but I'm not sure about it. And obviously that might change as I do more interviews for this movie and speak to more people, and then information might come into my brain. And the way I work is I am quite on the fly, and I tend to sit down and, you know, think, okay, blank page, now what do I do? I'm not a rigorous structuralist. Chris Nolan would shit if he saw my process, but But yeah, you find stuff
on the fly.
I do, but this one I have an opening in my head, but I'm not sure about it. I'll talk to you off mic about it. But it is interesting because sometimes that does happen. Sometimes you do get something in your head and you go, that's the opener. That's how I'm starting this feature.
It's nice when it happens.
Yeah.
I mean, to be honest, like when I came back from the set that day in LA, the first set visit, I went back to the hotel and I got my notes app and I basically came up with a structure. And obviously that changed over time, but the opening was essentially there.
Yeah.
That was it.
It's a great feature.
Still there.
It is a fantastic feature. Nick, although I would never say to his face, is a genuinely brilliant writer.
Thanks.
You can pick up his books as well, Wild and Crazy Guys and The Last Action Heroes, in all good bookstores. I was just on a thing with... I was just on a trip to Pompeii and bumped into and hung out, in fact, with Anthony Breshtigan, who also writes for our publication. And he was saying that he had been somewhere recently and had seen your book in a hotel.
That's nice.
I wanted to take a picture of it.
But, did he buy it?
No, it was in. He's bought it already, but it was in a hotel, and he was very, very happy to see your book in the wild. And I love that. When I see your books in the wild, I get a real kick from hiding behind other books.
You're very kind, man. I run ahead of you. I run ahead of you and put them in the hopes that you'll buy one. But you haven't yet. But no,
because you give me free copies.
Yeah, damn it.
I know.
That's a mistake.
One last thing about the Odyssey, Nick.
Yeah.
Three covers.
Yeah.
Matt Damon, Tom Holland.
Yeah.
Anne Hathaway. Explain yourself.
To be honest, that was something Christopher Nolan, like, we agreed on really early, and Christopher Nolan really liked the idea of us doing multiple covers. And to be honest, it was a film that really, not every film does, but when a film is really epic, and this is based on one of the most epic stories of all time, and it has a huge cast, and it has many A-list stars in it, how do you fit them all on one cover? And so we actually pitched five, and we ended up with three. You know, it's that was just to do with the art that was out there. And it's interesting because we kind of were pitching these covers before we knew who everyone was playing. And you know, I knew that Samantha Morton was Cersei a while back, but it was being reported that was Charlize Theron for a very long time.
Yeah.
So no one even knew. And so we didn't know for sure who everyone was in the film, even though we knew that. So you're kind of like guessing how many covers we'll end up with, but no, we ended up with three, and it's a family affair. It's the dad, the mum, and the son, and it's really cool. I'm really happy with them.
Yeah, fantastic, and it's on sale right now as well for the next one.
I should mention the subscriber cover as well, because
yes, I don't have it to hand.
Because usually, you know, and Chris Lupton, our great creative director, you know, assigns those, and they're inspired by whatever is on the newsstand cover, but he commissions artists, and it's always original art, and it's something really cool that only Empire subscribers get. But it was really interesting. Christopher Nolan was very involved in these, which is unusual for a director, but he personally provided references for us from the film of storm scenes and the boat. And so we then gave that to Paul Shipper, who did both of our Odyssey subscriber covers. He did the Trojan Horse last year, which I heard Christopher Nolan really liked. And he was very involved. So he's a very hands-on director in every way. And we experienced that secondhand.
Amazing. Amazing. All right, you still have time to pick it up. We do not have a lot of time. At the moment, Nick, we are running out of time, so we're not going to be able to do our usual exhaustive trawl through the magazine and the feature section. But
it's a good one.
It's a good one, but I'm going to read out what the features are, and you can talk to me about what you want to talk to me about. All right, so we can pick stuff out to dwell on. So we have a feature on Jane Schoenbrunn's teenage sex and death at Camp Miasma, which is intriguing. We have a feature on Pressure, which is a film about how a meteorologist had to make a big call on D-Day, when to start the D-Day landings. So that's coming out soon in the UK. What else we have? We have a feature on the long delayed, but finally nearly here, Coyote versus Acme, which is exciting. That's kind of an oral history of that. We have a feature on The End of Oak Street, which is David Robert Mitchell's new movie. And we have a really interesting one, Nick. Maybe this is where you want to start.
Yeah.
On a dream... How would you describe this woman? A dream coach? A dream specialist?
A dream weaver.
And how she interacts with actors.
To quote Garth Marenghi, Hollywood's dream weaver.
Yes.
This kind of came about organically because we've been talking to actors, and the name of this person, Kim Gilliam, Like she calls herself a creative coach who works with dreams and the unconscious. And her name kept coming up when we were talking to actors. And it became clear that, you know, I talked to Josh Brolin last year for The Running Man.
Yeah.
And he brought her up and he said that she changed the entire way that he acts, that he approaches acting. And basically, you know, you can read the piece to get more details, but essentially we talked to Jane Campion, we talked to Will Poulter, we got Josh Brolin, like, and we talked to Kim Gillingham herself and talked about like this new type of acting that she's kind of pioneering, where you're tapping into your own subconscious and bringing that into your performances.
Yeah.
And so it's a really fascinating piece, I think. And Hayley Campbell wrote that. She's an amazing writer. Funnily enough, Kim Gillingham was an actor herself, and you can see her in Seinfeld as the hand model. The hand model that George Costanza asks out.
I don't remember that episode, I'll be honest.
So she's in Friends as well, as one of Joey's ex-girlfriends. But it's a really fascinating piece, genuinely, and it's sort of changing how actors act. So that's a really good read.
Okay, and Josh Brolin is also in another feature. He is in a feature about Ridley Scott's The Dog Stars, which is written by Ian Freer.
It's a great read, yeah. Josh Brolin's being very candid. Ridley Scott is on incredible form. He tells Ian, "No action scene is challenging for me, dude. Are you fucking kidding? It's easy." And it's like, genuinely, he's like that all the way through this interview. He's on fiery form, and it's a blast.
I love talking to Ridley Scott. He's amazing. The man gives zero fucks.
I've never talked to him. There's a legend in the Empire office that when you interview Ridley Scott, he tries to catch you out by pretending he's forgotten something, and he does it every time.
He challenges your film knowledge.
Yeah, is this true?
Yes and no. It doesn't happen every single time. And it might just genuinely be him kind of forgetting stuff. But I think that's how it's been interpreted. That
forgetting
he is,
stuff? Are you fucking kidding me, dude?
That he's checking your bona fides.
Yeah.
And then if you come up with the answer, he goes, "Okay, I respect you. Yeah. You know, dude, where's my car? Okay, let's go for that."
Game respects game.
It does very much respect game.
So just to blast through a few other things, I mean, it's a shame because I think this is an absolute banger of an issue, but I would say that. But yeah, we talked to not only David Robert Mitchell, director of The Amazing It Follows, about his new film, The End of Oak Street, but we also talked to J.J. Abrams about that because he's producing, and that's a really, really good read. That's by Jamie Graham.
See, the fact that J.J. is involved in that makes me wonder if it's a Cloverfield movie in disguise. Because it was originally called Flowerfell Street or Flowerfell Avenue or something like that, which is kind of Cloverfield adjacent. And then the fact there's a bad robot thing, the fact there's J.J. Abrams, it's been a long time since we had a Cloverfield movie.
Do you think that's going to be a big twist? Are the dinosaurs going to be aliens?
It might be a big twist. Like, how does this go?
Are the dinosaurs ghosts?
The dinosaurs might be alien ghosts. The premise of this movie is that a normal suburban street is somehow transported back in time, right, to the time of the dinosaurs.
Yep.
And so Ewan McGregor and Anne Hathaway and their kin and other neighbors as well, who I imagine get picked off pretty quickly, have to somehow fight back against the dinosaurs and presumably try and find a way home. So you're asking yourself, what's done this? What's triggered this time tunnel type thing? Might it be a Cloverfield experiment? So I'm just saying, I'm throwing it out there. Don't be surprised if this turns out to be a Cloverfield movie in all but name.
I think it's going to be a Super 8 sequel.
Super
10. Who knows? We'll soon find out.
We will.
There's a fantastic piece by Beth Webb on teenage sex and death at Camp Miasma, a film I'm still recovering from. I think I saw it about 2 months ago, but I'm shook. And Beth talks to director Jane Schumbrunn. If you have seen their previous film, I Saw the TV Glow, then you will have some inkling of what to expect from this film. It's very out there, but they are really interesting, and there's incredible story behind this film. Also talks to Gillian Anderson and Hannah Einbinder. So that's a really, really, really great read. And then that's the feature section, I think, unless I've missed something.
Yeah, pretty much. That's it.
But that is stuffed with goodness. Alex Godfrey, our features editor, spoke to Nicolas Cage for your section.
He did. All right, so I'm going to mention three things in my section, which is the Final Cut section. It's the best section in the magazine, obviously. Accept those substitutes. And Spider-Noir has been out now on Prime Video for a few weeks now, but we decided to hold back
this interview with Nicolas Cage for this moment to make sure that everyone was au fait with it. Everyone who wants to see Spider-Noir has seen Spider-Noir. And Alex spoke to Nick Cage for a very in-depth examination of Cage's fascination with film noir and spiders and whatnot. And it's there's a startling opening image here as well. And it's a really, really fun interview.
Yeah, Alex has interviewed Nicolas Cage many times, and it's always a treat. It's always a great read when the two of them get together.
Yeah,
a great pull quote from Cage: "You plunge into the abyss and you call up the cauldron." Which I heard you saying earlier.
Yes.
You were talking about lunch. I mean, only Nicolas Cage could say something like that and it sound cool. It wouldn't work for me.
No, he makes it work. It's terrific.
Yeah. There's something really cool in your section, very unusual. For the Corin Hardy film Whistle. Do you want to explain what that is?
Yeah, so Corin Hardy, you'll know him if you listen to this podcast. You know, he's a friend of the podcast and a lovely, lovely guy. His film Whistle came out a few months ago. And in a year that is, I think, a real banner year for horror films, obviously you've got Obsession, you've got Backrooms, you've got, you know, things like, at the moment, Evil Dead Burn. You've got things like Hokum. It's been a cracking year for horror. Whistle, I think, was a little overlooked. And it's a really effective slasher film with a twist. And it has a couple of death sequences in it that are genuinely unlike anything I've ever seen before. And one of them is a character is killed in a car crash, but there's no car. So the concept of Whistle is that characters are essentially killed by their future deaths. So when they hear the death whistle, their future death will find them. And in this case, it's a character who is fated to die in a horrible car crash. But we don't see the car crash happening. We see the effects of the car crash happening to this person in real time. And this is a, I'd say, 95% practically achieved sequence that is quite eye-popping and spine-shattering. And Corin sat down and opened his archives and gave us concept art and unseen stills, behind the scenes things, and really walked me through step by step how he and his team pulled off this incredible sequence. There's some other astonishing sequences in this movie as well. So if you haven't seen Whistle, check it out. Because if you're a gore hungry kill hound like I am, then you will find a lot to satisfy you in this movie.
And it's a really great article. Like, it's a very unique thing, and it's great when you know, sometimes when you know the filmmaker, you can get them to open up their archive and you get hold of stuff. And there's like, the art in this piece is really, really fantastic, and it's very cool. Unique. You have a ranking on football movies.
We do.
Can I read you a response from a reader to this? Damien Matthews, RE football movies in your August edition. How about Marvelous 2014 with Toby Jones? Finally, a positive, kind, amusing story about the brilliant people working behind the scenes who care so much for the sport, their clubs, and each other, and no hooligans. So what do you think of that? Have you seen Marvelous with Toby Jones?
I have seen Marvelous with Toby Jones. It didn't spring to mind immediately. It wasn't on the list that we discussed, the panel and myself.
But it's got the word Marvel in it.
It does. I think I put it in the Marvel ranking. I'm not sure. But this is one I wanted to do for a little while, and it was just finding a panel to do it was tricky. And obviously the World Cup is just about to finish, so we thought this is perfect timing, so let's try and make this work. Nobody at Empire likes football, except for me. And so luckily, some of our freelancers are massively into it, so we were able to make this happen. But yes, anyway, that's enough about my section. There's other great things in there well. But
let's rewind.
Word, Beth's section, obviously John's section, the review section is amazing. Gives you all the reviews you could possibly wish to read.
What's the lead review this month?
I have no idea. I'm on a different
Disclosure
page.
Disclosure Day.
Disclosure Day.
Steven Spielberg all Friends right. Home. We've got The Bear Season 5. Five stars for that, which I really need to check that out and catch up with that. And The Bond Game. I want to give a shout out to The Bond Game, which I just played, and it's a banger.
The Bond Game. But in Beth's section, let's pick three things out from Beth's section, first word. And the first thing to pick out, obviously, is Resident Evil. Zach Cregger's Resident Evil, which I haven't seen, but I'm hearing amazing things about. This is his adaptation of the classic survival horror game. A game, Nick, I've actually played and completed. One of the few.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Which one?
First and third. I completed both.
You haven't
first
played
and third.
The second one's the best.
No, I played the second, but I never completed it.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, I played the latest one a few months ago in Basingstoke for some reason. Anyway, enough of that.
Too much.
But yeah, I am extremely excited for this. Zach Cregg is obviously hot off weapons, and he tells us that this film has a lot in common with Mad Max Fury Road, and that's all I need to hear. Bring it on.
Yeah. I spoke to the Johns, as they are called, the directors of Game Night and Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves, and the sorely underrated Vacation, Jonathan Goldstein and John Francis Daly, about their new movie, Mayday, which sees Kenneth Branagh and Ryan Reynolds thrown together in a buddy action comedy that takes place in the Russia of 1987. And that's going to be on Apple in about 2 months or so. And that was a really, really fun interview. I love talking to those guys. They are very, very cool indeed. And we talked about how they have a penchant for putting characters into seemingly impossible situations and then having fun finding their way out again.
A penchant, you say?
A penchant.
A penchant.
A penchant.
We talked to Irvin Welsh about Trainspotting the musical.
You're so, fucking kidding.
Three words I never thought would be in the same
I am
sentence.
Fascinated by this. I keep seeing the adverts on the tube for a Trainspotting. Jesus Christ.
Raj.
It does. You're right. Yes. I mean, it seems like an unusual choice for a musical.
It's a bit Vera Drake, the musical, isn't it? But
yeah.
Why not? Why not?
And, why not?
You know, and Trainspotting is, you know, it's very on brand that it's surprising, it's shocking. Let's see. I'm keen to see it. I know a few people from the team are going on opening night to check it out. So I am intrigued to hear what they think.
How are they going to do the baby on the ceiling? Is there a song where Begbie sings, I always knew that was gonna fuck some
Oh my God. Oh my God. There's a great piece, Video In Demand, where we investigate the resurgence of VHS. When was the last time you watched a VHS tape?
No. A long time
ago. It's coming
ago.
Back.
It shouldn't.
Get a VHS player
this
ready.
This isn't like final. This
no,
is like,
it's coming back.
It's
so
clearly
we
worse
there
than...
There are video stores coming back. People are... It's, you know, Gen Z are loving it.
This needs to stop.
Anyway, we talked to the people who were going nuts for VHS. I have very fond memories of, you know, I had a Jurassic Park. On a videotape that was circulating the school, and I always thought it was a cut with extra scenes that weren't in the finished film, which I don't think is true.
Nick, you
fool. I think I got confused. But I remember that videotape was so exciting. It was in a blue and white striped case, and I was just so excited by it. But anyway, video is coming back. That's just a fact. You're going to have to deal with that. John Nugent went on another set. This one didn't have Brendan Fraser on it, but it did have a giant animatronic hippo for the film Hungry. And John spent quite a bit of time with this animatronic hippo. There's a picture of him with it at the front of the magazine, but it's a very, very entertaining piece. Mm. I think John was invited to put his head into the hippo's jaws, but he didn't do it.
Beth spoke to Pedro Almodovar, which is very, very cool, for his new movie, Bitter Christmas. So you can hear Helen O'Hara's ears perking up. Christmas? Does this mean I can feature this in Bah Humbug? You never know. But that's cool. Pedro in the pages of Empire magazine. And finally, this month's How Much Is a Pint of Milk is the great American comic actor and star of the forthcoming movie, Le Dink, Jake Johnson. And he is a great improviser and very, very funny guy. And as you'd imagine, this is a funny, very funny pint of milk.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, hey! Nick, should we take a quick look at contents? What's your best line in contents? What's your favorite line in contents? Written by, of course, a genius.
My favorite thing about contents is the advert for an Odyssey watch.
Oh, damn you.
I was wondering why Matt Damon was wearing it in the film. but it all makes sense. The Hamilton X Odyssey watch.
That's
a nice
watch.
And it's a lovely watch. And it's so the hands of the minutes and the hour are swords. I mean, this is classy AF.
It's a classy joint. Also, it says in collaboration with Christopher Nolan, and it gives you his signature. So now we can take that signature and we can forge Christopher Nolan's signature and we can gain access to his millions.
Let's not do that. That'll make him upset. And we don't want to do that.
Oh, but, this is not admissible in court, by the way.
Okay.
I've checked. Podcasts are not admissible.
But yeah, no, this is a very nice watch. And if Odysseus had been wearing one of these, maybe he wouldn't have been 20 years late to get home. anyway, contents. Are you really asking me what my favorite one of your jokes is?
Yeah, go on then. Yeah.
Have you
read it?
A while back.
Yeah. I'll be honest, Nick, this is not my best content.
No, I like the bit where you said yes, chefs, but it's solid.
I'm not even sure it's solid. It's disappointing.
Well, let's talk more about it.
Yeah, let's talk more about that and know more about this issue because we have run out of time. We have to go on another Odyssey right now and do a spoiler special. So all that remains, Nick, is for me to tell people where they can get this issue. Where can they get this issue, Nick?
Shops.
Thanks. Just shops. Go into a greengrocer, it'll be there.
Go find it.
Dorothy Perkins, does that still exist?
If you buy all three of the covers, please send us a photo and it would make our day. But yeah, collect them all. Why not?
Collect them all. Send us photographic evidence of your three covers.
It would be a heroic feat.
Yes.
But yeah, go out and find it.
Online?
Good luck finding the one you want.
They can buy it virtually?
You can go to greatmagazines.co.uk and you can buy it online there.
So that's Good News Agents, Evil News Agents, Virtual News Agents, all good. And if you don't already subscribe to Empire Magazine, you could do that by going to empireonline.com. You can also sign up for the Empire VIP Club, which will get you access to some of the incredible events that we hold as well, plus a magazine subscription, plus access to Empire Plus, our brand new subscription podcast channel, in which you get all kinds of things as well. Or you can just subscribe to Empire Plus on its own as well. So exciting. Hey, while we're shamelessly plugging, I might as well say we're also doing a live show, a live podcast, September 5th, King's Place, Saturday, September 5th, King's Place, part of the London Podcast Festival. Tickets are now on sale, kingsplace.co.uk. So if you want to come along and see the Giggling Idiots in action, come along. Tickets are on sale. Buy them now. Nick, you coming?
Oh, I'll check my diary.
Yeah. If I see a giant horse outside King's Place, I'm going to tell him not to drag it in. It does not end well. But anyway, on that note,
I wonder if horses have ever hidden inside a giant man. It's food for thought.
This is why I like you, Nick. You ask the questions that nobody else thinks
of. Dares to. We're all thinking it, but only I say it. Actually, you've reminded me, Chris, we have a summer blockbuster subscription offer on at the moment. Three issues of Empire for £3. Head to greatmagazines.co.uk/Empire or scan a QR code.
Nick, this is incredible shameless plug-in.
This is the most shameless yet.
That's a genuinely good deal. That's a genuinely good shameless plug. I liked it, and I enjoyed this episode. It was fun.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too.
Yeah.
I'm going to get back in my horse.
Yes.
And then you can wheel me to the next studio. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Oh, no, we're just staying here. It's fine.
Okay. Right.
You can stay exactly where you are.
All right. Okay. Other people
are going to come and join us in 2 seconds.
Let us know. But if you read the issue, I hope you do. Please let us know what you think, which bits you like, and which bits you want us to change. We're always interested in feedback. So message me or message Empire on socials.
Yeah. Yes, indeedly. Okay, that's it. There's one last thing I want to leave you with, which is the revelation. I think it might have been in the last Odyssey feature that you wrote, Nick, that Chris Nolan came close to directing Troy.
Yeah.
And this was 20-odd years ago. And then obviously he directed Batman Begins instead, and Wolfgang Peterson ended up directing Troy. But now here he is directing the Odyssey, which might be his best movie to date. Certainly we've given it 5 stars. We love it. And it just reminded me of that old classic saying, Nick, if at first you don't succeed, try again. Thanks for listening. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Idiot.